Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to CenterPoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. And today, I'm very happy to welcome our guest, Connor Schwartz, to return back to our show. This is the third time you've been on. Is that right, Connor?
Yes, it is. Yep.
And the last time you're on, we talked to your subconscious, so I don't know how much of it you remembered. But I wanted Connor to come on because he is now in the real estate business. And today I want to drill and talk about the psychology of real estate sellers, buyers, investors, and just understand that world. But before we do that, maybe, Connor, you can give us a little bit of background. I'd love to hear how you came to your current career. I know it's been a circuitous path, and the reason I'm asking you to tell us about it is because I counsel a lot of older teens and young adults, and the path you went through might help somebody else. So tell us how you got to this point.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess I'll start with kind of growing up, I always liked the construction world in some capacity. I liked the idea of being able to build something or create something out of nothing, so to speak. So for a while growing up, I thought I wanted to be in construction, thought I wanted to be an architect, something along those lines. Shadowed a couple architects and realized quickly I did not want to be an architect. So in high school I did that, and then I was trying to look, okay, what else could I do potentially in the construction industry, the construction realm, that was still relevant, but not necessarily architecture or engineering. Found a program called construction management, and basically it's a bachelor's degree. It's a four-year degree, and you go, you learn all the ins and outs of the trade, how to basically build a building from the ground up, manage a project, or do a complete, development, redevelopment project, renovation project, and how that process works, and working with architects and engineers and working with clients, whether it's the owner or a company, to get the project done. So went to college, went to university, and for that, and then in my second year there, I did an internship on the construction of a 3.8 million square foot Amazon warehouse, which was an awesome experience. It was a ground up construction, amazing experience to be on that project management team. But I quickly realized and learned that was also not what I wanted to do. So I almost, got another taste of that, and realizing I didn't want to work in that capacity in doing that sort of thing in that industry. But I still really liked the aspect of, again, the construction stuff, the idea of being able to build, something out of nothing. So my junior year of college, I started applying for and reaching out to different real estate agents, real estate investors, property management companies, different real estate related companies that renovated properties but also owned investment properties, and tried to just figure out if I could do an internship in some capacity with them or get a mentor in some capacity. Nobody answered me. The first round of, emails and phone calls I sent out or texted or sent my resume to, nobody responded. So a couple weeks went by and turned into a couple of months. I finally, decided there's one guy that did everything that I was looking to learn where I live. And I decided, on my way home for winter break, I would just stop by his office with a letter saying who I am and a resume and of what I've done so far and see what I could do. And so I dropped it off. Nobody was at the office at the time, but I dropped it off, and I got a text from him the next morning saying, "You're pretty persistent. Come in on Monday. We can talk." And I've been working with him hand in hand ever since. So since that point, that was in 2020, November of 2020. So for the past 4 years now, I've been in the real estate world. I've gotten my real estate license. I've purchased 5 investment properties, so currently own 5 investment properties. And I work hand in hand with a property management company, so we manage about 100 properties, about 400 total units, local to the area. I represent clients from all over the world, Argentina, London, England, Mexico, and all over the United States as well, from California and Arizona to Florida, New York City, Philadelphia. So a good wide range of clients from everywhere, and we work and operate primarily in the investment space, but we also represent some residential clients in the purchase and sale of their homes as well, and have been doing that for the past, like I said, 4 years now, and we've developed a real estate sales team to go along with that. So now we've got 5 or 6 agents that I've helped in training and getting up and running, and we've really grown our team, and looking forward to what 2025 has in store.
This is quite a story. So I was hoping to drill back a bit in your past and understand your thinking process,
yep.
Again, so that kids will understand that it's not necessarily a straight line. So what did you not like about architecture?
Yeah, so I think internships and shadowing people in some capacity is a good thing, because sometimes it's, oh, this is awesome, this is exactly what I want to do, but at the same time, it could also be, oh, actually, this is not what I really want to do because of X, Y, or Z. And then you can kind of move on and just figure out what you want to do along the line. So that was my experience with it. The reason I didn't like architecture in particular was I liked the idea of, like I said, building something in some capacity, and I figured, architecture. And then when I actually went and shadowed the architects, I realized quickly that while it is still really cool, it's a lot of sitting at a desk. It's a lot of, numbers, calculations, and patience. And I need to be more out and about. Like, my personality is more so talking and interacting with people on a daily basis, like different people on a daily basis, being out and about, not necessarily sitting at a desk all day, every day. So I was able to kind of, in regards to shadowing the architects, I quickly learned that at least the ones that I was, involved with, it was a lot of sitting around, and that didn't really fit my personality type.
So that's a really important lesson, is that you want to fit your personality to your career, because you can be here every day, and you want it to, every workday at least, you want it to jive with you, not just take on a job because it makes money or it pleases your parents. It's got to be something that you work with. So then you checked out construction management. What ended up turning you away from that?
Yeah, so when I went to university, we're required to have internships, which, before you do any of the internships, you're like, oh, we got to do an internship. But at the same time, it was one of the best things to ever happen to me, similar to, shadowing the architects, because construction, it's almost always a paid internship. So I was getting paid to have a summer job, and I'm learning everything that's, the industry I was getting my degree for. So I quickly learned, kind of similar to the shadowing with the architects, that it is less sitting around, but it's still equally, a lot of kind of the same tasks on repeat. And I was working about 10 to 12 hour days, minimum 5 days a week, but, oftentimes 6, sometimes even 7 days a week, and working tons and tons of hours, getting paid for it and making good money, but working a ton of hours and being stuck to, okay, having to be at this job site or be at the office or be here, very rigid schedule and not a lot of flexibility, and being, you know, I won't say forced, but having to work that amount of hours, I just realized, you know, if I'm going to work that much, I'm fine working. You have to pay your dues in whatever industry or whatever you go into. You need to work hard and you need to, you know, work your way up the ladder, so to speak. But my thinking behind it was, if I'm going to work this hard, I don't want to work this hard for the next 30, 40 years of my life and kind of be in a similar position to where I am now. So I was trying to think of different industries or different other paths I could take where I work really hard, but it return on the investment is much greater later down the road, if that makes sense.
Well, I think you told me that you have other dreams besides your work. Did you think about that at the time, that you want to have time for those things?
Yeah, yes, and that's the other thing where it's definitely, you know, I'd look around and I would see my, my supervisors and some of the other guys that had been with the company for, say, 15, 20 years. Again, very successful, you know, they like what they're doing, but if they have to work on the weekends, well, they're not seeing their kids, they're not seeing their wives, they're not seeing, their family and being able to spend time with their family or whatever the case may be, or do hobbies or whatever. They were unable to do it because of work, and I did not like that. I did not want to see myself in that position 15 to 20 years from where I was 5 years ago. So yes, it definitely, that played a significant role in it as well, where I couldn't see a path from where I was staying in the industry without, you know, sacrificing kind of that family time or life down the line.
So the second lesson you're describing, and second and third, is first do an internship. I think that's a great idea to find out what the job really is like, and then make sure that you pick a job that allows you to feel fulfilled, not just at the job, but in life in general. So, again, I think really good points. So then you found real estate. I'm curious, you said you like building things. How does real estate allow you to build things?
Yeah, so real estate is cool because I found that everyone in some capacity knows somebody that invest in real estate in some capacity, or even if it's just buying or selling, a residential, primary residential home, everybody to some degree knows someone that has owned or owns real estate or buying real estate. So it has opened so many doors for me in regards to connections and network that I actually work directly with a bunch of builders and developers of real estate, whether it's residential houses or commercial, you know, buildings or warehouses or whatever the case may be. I kind of am in contact with a lot of these people on a constant basis, so I'm able to kind of see the growth and see, the process from that standpoint, from more of an outside perspective, but working kind of almost hand-in-hand with the client. And also at the same time, while I don't currently do ground-up construction at the moment, new build construction, we currently renovate, you know, old and dilapidated houses that need to be renovated. We'll buy those and we'll renovate them, and then we'll turn around and we'll either sell them on the market or we'll rent them out and make them go from being in poor condition to being in excellent condition and shape. And it's really cool seeing those transformations from basically, you know, an uninhabitable house to an amazing brand new house, pretty much. And being able to see that process and be part of that process, and having the background I did with, you know, going to school for construction management and having those internships, working for bigger construction companies, being able to utilize that and my background with, you know, my real estate license and the clients that I've been fortunate enough to work with, it has been a cool combination to kind of get to that product.
And then buried into the real estate story is that you were persistent in looking for an internship, and it sounds like the persistence is maybe what got you the interview. Do you have anything else to add to encourage people to keep going?
Yeah, I would say that definitely life does not wish around for anybody, and if you really, really want to do something, you got to just go after it, and you're going to be told no a lot, and you're going to be given no answers at all. Sometimes, but you just gotta keep going forward, keep pushing forward, and keep asking questions until you get an answer. And if you come to a dead end, well, then just kind of pivot and go in a different direction slightly, but keep your end goal in mind and keep going until you're able to get to it, because at the end of the day, it's definitely worth it.
And remember, it only takes one good career, one good contact to change your life.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a saying in real estate, it's, you know, you got to get 99 no's to get one yes, but that one yes could change your life. And, you know, all it takes is one, and then you never know what's going to happen. And one yes turns into two yeses, and it kind of just exponentially grows over time.
Are you applying that to the clients? Where does that real estate statement come from?
So in regards to sales, whether you're, you know, putting offers in on properties and you're getting declined or getting outbid by other people, or you are, you know, working and cold calling, say, clients in regards to, you know, hey, my name is Connor, I am a real estate agent and investor, would you be interested in selling your house? You know, in regards to getting listing leads, same exact thing. You're going to get no 99.9% of the time, but every time you get a yes, and you get that opportunity, it usually leads into more. But you got to get through all the no's to get to the yes.
And so the no's, you don't take to heart, you just keep going.
Right. You just got to keep going. You just got to keep being persistent and trusting the process and working hard, putting your head down, working hard, and not letting the no's deter you, because, like I said, all it takes is one yes, and it can really change everything.
So, fascinating stuff. Let's shift to the psychology of a real estate investor. What is there such a thing as an average investor, like the profile that you could describe?
I would say the typical investor, your everyday investor is looking to build, at least in my market, is looking to build cash flow. So their mindset is create as many streams of income as possible to offset living expenses. And then if they have, you know, an active day job, a traditional 9-to-5 job, use that money to kind of fuel their investment. So I'd say the typical profile of one of the clients that I work with is somebody that has their traditional 9-to-5 job in some capacity, and they use that active income. We call a 9-to-5 job active income, the money that you actively have to work towards earning. They use all the money they earn in that capacity to then turn around and invest it in different ways. And obviously the clients that I work with primarily use real estate to leverage that money and invest that money. And as a result, they build up portfolios, and their end goal is like how a lot of people invest in 401ks and Roth IRAs, which they do that as well. They're also looking to diversify and build up their real estate portfolio so that when they get to retirement age, they can either sit back and live off the cash flow, the monthly income that each property is bringing in, or at that time, depending on how old they are, if they decide to sell their portfolio or some of their portfolio, chances are those properties have gone up in value, and they're able to kind of use that as money to go towards their retirement as well.
Why does someone to choose to invest in real estate as opposed to investing in the stock market? You mentioned some of them do both, but like, some people do only one. Why do they make that choice? How does that work?
So a lot of real estate investors, they like to invest in real estate because of the tax advantages of it, of two reasons. Tax advantages and then also the appreciation. So appreciation is when, you know, you say you buy a house for $100,000 in 2020, and then in 2000, and you don't do anything to it at all, but in 2030 you decide you want to sell it. And at that time, you sell it for $200,000, but you didn't do anything to the house at all. That would be appreciation. That basically is when the market, you know, around every single house in that general market has gone up in value just because of it's existing and just because time has gone on in the sun. So a lot of clients like the idea of investing in real estate because if they buy a house for $100,000, and they don't do anything to it, 10 years from now, they might be able to sell it for $200,000, and they just made $100,000 off of that investment. And then those 10 years along the way, they've collected, say, rental income from it. So if they're collecting, you know, $1,000 a month for 10 years, I mean, that's $12,000 times 10 is $120,000 plus their $100,000 that they made from selling it. So they just made, you know, $220,000 from a $100,000 investment. So there's multiple streams of or angles for revenue in that sense. And then the tax advantages, you're able to depreciate, that real estate's a depreciable asset. So you can write off the depreciation on your home against your income for tax purposes, and it allows your...
So the it's a different kind of vehicle for investment, and yet what I'd like to talk to you after the break is what kind of investment of time, because you could be a passive investor and, I guess, not do much of the real estate you own, but maybe that's not as good as it could, a little bit more active. So I want to drill down what that means right after the break. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens, harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Anbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Anbar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Anbar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at CenterpointMedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. Our special guest, Connor Schwartz, is teaching us about real estate investing. As you were talking about it, I was thinking that you know, we talked about appreciation and value and depreciation for tax purposes, but it also depends on the location of real estate. I lived in the Syracuse market, as you know, for 20 years, and during that time, between 1994 and 2014, there was very little appreciation of the market. And since then, the last 10 years, things have changed. So Can you tell us a little bit about location when you buy real estate for investing?
Yeah, location is definitely key. I mean, everybody preaches location, location, location. So location is really where you're going to make your money. And as an investor, you want to obviously buy in a more desirable location than a less desirable location. In regards to the Syracuse market in upstate New York as the general, I guess, consensus, appreciation, generally speaking, has not been a big thing up here in Syracuse. It hasn't been until Dr. Ambar's point the last, I would say, even 4 or 5 years, really, that really any appreciation has played a role or a factor. Generally speaking, your more desirable areas are down south, where there's less, less property tax or no property tax. Obviously Florida's always a hot market. Texas is usually a hot market, and down in the Carolinas as well. Whereas upstate New York, we have the snowy cold winters and the older houses, and we have property taxes. So it's generally speaking a less desirable place to live overall. So the location is usually not ideal from that standpoint. Now, over the past 4 or 5 years since COVID, we've seen kind of a reversal in regards to, or not necessarily a reversal, but an uptick in appreciation because a lot of people are moving to the area for jobs. We have a lot of very good hospitals, universities. We have a couple of big technology companies coming in. And different, like Amazon, we've got Micron, so some big name brand companies that have come and invested into Central New York, and as a result, employees are moving here, and then other jobs and other companies are coming here to kind of play off of that, and we're seeing a high demand for housing, but a low supply. So just basic supply and demand economics, when you have low supply but high demand, the price and the cost of the house is going to go up, and therefore the appreciation of the house is going to go up.
How did the investors change over the last decade? I know you started 4 years ago, but I know that your colleague who has trained you worked for many years. Has the kind of investor that's put money to the Syracuse market changed over the last decade?
Yes, that is a great question. So generally speaking, the Syracuse market in particular is nationally known as a cash flow market where you can buy a house for $100,000, and it's a good quality house, and you could make, some good rent off. If you buy a duplex or a two unit property for $100,000 or $115,000 and you can rent out each unit for $1,100 and you're bringing in $2,200 a month, that's a really good return. So Syracuse, New York used to have, and still does, have a lot of investors that are very, very into the monthly cash flow and generating as big of a monthly cash flow as possible, but they didn't really care too much about the appreciation factor. Over the last, I'd say, 4 or 5 years, now that there's big technology companies coming in and more industry coming in, we're seeing cash flowing properties of that scale and magnitude decrease. There's not as many out there, but appreciation has gone through the roof compared to what it usually is. So we're seeing a lot of investors now that are looking to buy land or buy, properties, but their intent, they don't even care if the property is cash flowing or the property is bringing in money. They just want to buy it, and they want to wait for some of these big industries to be fully up and running, and then they're just going to turn around and sell the property for, maybe double what they paid for it. And they're looking at their investment from that standpoint, which is definitely new to the area. It, previously to the last couple of years, you'd never see that in Syracuse, New York.
Do you have a lot of foreign investors, like Chinese and Japanese investors?
Personally, I do have a handful of foreign clients, but a lot of my clients are either local. Investors are either local investors or they're investors from the east coast of the United States. A lot from kind of Rhode Island, New York City, Boston, Philadelphia, so some of the bigger metropolitan areas on the east coast here. And then I've got a couple, I'd say four or five clients that are scattered from around the country, from California, Arizona, Texas, Florida. And then I've got another handful of clients that are from other places around the country, or the world, sorry.
Tell me about active versus passive investors. What's the difference?
Yeah, so an active investor, I guess it depends on my definition of an active investor would be somebody that is actively involved in the process, and is going to be playing some role in the process, whether it's finding the property, and helping in the acquisition of the property, helping in the renovation or the management of the property, or helping in some sort of way that's hands-on and actively being involved. A passive investor would, in my opinion, would be more so somebody that is literally just giving money, handing money over as a private investor. You have contracts, and they're a part owner. So it's also broken down as kind of a general partner or a limited partner. In that capacity, general partner being the active partner and limited partner being the passive partner. But yeah, passive partner, in my opinion, would be more so somebody that's basically just giving the money to whoever the active investor is for the active investor to go and execute the plan.
So if you are a single passive investor, I could come to you and say, find me a house and manage it for me. Would that work?
So are you saying if you were a passive investor?
Yeah, as an example.
Yes, yep. So if you were a passive investor and you called me and you said, hey, you know, I've got X amount of dollars, I'm looking to invest in your market, then yes, we would help you find the property. We'd help you purchase the property. If it needs to be renovated, we'd help you renovate it. If it needs to be rented out, we'd help you rent it out. We'd help you manage it, and then, it'd basically be cash flow from there, and we would manage the property. You get your check every month, and that's that.
I think you told me at one point that you prefer people who are more actively involved because they take, better care of the property or something if they know what's happening.
Yes, absolutely. So we always, whenever we have a client, we always recommend the client to come to the area to see their property in person at least once a year. But ideally, you know, we have clients that come once a quarter. But once or twice a year, if you come up, then we can walk through the property. We can game plan, okay, this work needs to be done or this work needs to be done. Because a lot of times when you have a passive investor, not all the time, but a lot of times when you have a passive investor and they don't come to see their property, they start to not care as much. And when they start not to care as much, obviously the property can, start to deteriorate in some capacity, which we do not want. We want the property to stay in as good of condition as possible, and we want the passive investor to care about the property and its physical condition as much as possible.
Got it. Well, when we come back, I want to talk to you about the individual home buyer and home seller and the psychology of that kind of purchase, which is very different from investing. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming Attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar. Our guest, Connor Schwartz, who's telling us about real estate investing. And now I'd like to talk about real estate for the residential properties and the psychology of the buyer and the psychology of the seller. So, can you describe a prototypical buyer, how they approach it? And by the way, now we have new laws. What's happened to the buyer's markets?
Yeah, so like you mentioned, there's new laws that were put into place as of August 17th. Basically, long story short, the seller in a transaction is no longer required to pay for or cover any of the buyer agent's compensation, which we call co-broke. They're no longer required to co-broke the deal, or a listing agent's no longer required to co-broke a deal, which means that buyer agents can no longer rely on a seller or the seller's side to pay for their traditional 3% commission. So now there's new contracts that have to be put in place, and before you show a property, before you work with a buyer client, you have to have a buyer agency agreement form signed with them, basically saying that the buyer or the client that you're going to be working with is willing to pay you X amount of dollars or as a flat fee or a certain percentage of whatever the net purchase price is for whatever house they buy. It doesn't matter, you know, what house it is or what the price is. They're basically signing into an agreement stating that they're willing to pay that if the seller is not willing to cover the buyer agent's commission. So I would say that's definitely thrown a curveball for a lot of buyers over the last 4 or 5 months, especially first-time home buyers who, you know, are usually using FHA loans, which is 3.5% down or 5% down conventional loans to buy a home because they don't have tens of thousands of dollars to be able to go and achieve the American dream. They're, you know, oftentimes just out of, you know, high school or college. They're, you know, a couple years into having their first job. They haven't been able to save up that amount of money, but they still want to fulfill the dream of home ownership, and the FHA and 5% down conventional loans are awesome vessels and ways to do so. But now that buyers are, you know, potentially forced to, if not have to, pay for their agent's commission, it's becoming a lot harder for buyers to, especially first-time home buyers, to afford to buy a home, A, and B, if they can buy a home, a lot of them are figuring out that they can almost not use a buyer's agent, or aren't able to use a buyer's agent because they won't be able to afford it. So they'll go directly to, they'll just look up the listings themselves and find listing agents and reach out to the listing agents directly, in regards to that. So I'd say my typical buyer client at the current moment is, you know, I got a couple, but the current typical buyer client is your first time home buyer, or I also have a handful of clients that are in the market to downsize and are selling their big home because their kids moved away, gone to college, or gone, you know, out of the state, and they're looking to downsize to something smaller. So it's two very different processes for sure. But that those are two of kind of the main clients that I'm looking at or that I'm currently working with.
Now, obviously, I'm talking to real estate professionals, so I'm wondering how you'll answer this question. Who should think about buying a house, or is buying a house for everyone?
Yeah, so I think it really comes down to, I get asked this question a lot, actually. It comes down to where do you see yourself in the next 3 to 5 years. If you have a job, you know, a good paying job, and you're planning to stay wherever you are for, you know, I'd say at least 3 to 5 years, then it might make sense to buy compared to renting. If you are, you know, just moving to a city, you've never lived there before, or if you are unsure if you're going to want to stay where you currently live for the longer term, or at least, you know, you don't know if you're going to stay there for longer than a couple of years, then I wouldn't recommend buying because it's going to be more of a hassle than it's worth, and you don't know what the market will do in the next, you know, 2 to 5 years. It could take a slight dip, but generally speaking, if you purchase and you own a home for, you know, longer than 5 to 10 years, you're usually, obviously nothing's guaranteed, but you're usually kind of safe in regards to being able to sell your house and not lose money on the sale. So I think if you know, you know, relatively speaking, kind of long term, you'll be in one location. In my opinion, it's worth buying compared to renting, just because, you know, rent is more expensive than owning a home, oftentimes than not from a monthly standpoint, like a monthly payment standpoint. But also, you won't be able to take advantage of the appreciation if you're renting. And if, you know, 3 or 5 years turns into 15 or 20 years, you're going to want to own the home more so than renting at that point. Does that answer your question?
It does, and I think if you're going to, you have to pay a rent, you have to pay it something, somewhere to live, and if you're just renting, that money goes away, although you're saving yourself a headache of having to make home repairs, or and of course you're more mobile if you're renting than if you have your own home.
Yeah, so, and I think, you know, I've got a really good friend who literally just asked me this question 2 days ago, because she's in an industry where she could get an amazing opportunity anywhere in the world, but she's hung up on not wanting to have to pay rent while she's currently living where she is here in New York, and she wanted to buy, and I basically said, you know, if you could get the potential is you get a call tomorrow, and you might be on your way to California, or you might be on your way to Florida, or England, or you know, wherever, you know, and you're not going to have to deal with selling your house, or you might risk not being able to sell it for as much as you bought it for, because you might have this awesome job tomorrow, then it makes more sense to rent, because it's way easier to pack up and go when you're renting than if you own the home.
Exactly. So, okay, let's talk about the psychology of the home buyer. So I want to buy a home, and now the market's really hot, so good homes are scarcer than used to be. How do you counsel buyers through that? Because I know some buyers have tried to buy homes for a long time and have not succeeded. But tell me about that.
Yeah, so it is definitely, it's very taxing. It is a hard and challenging process in the current market. The market that I'm in at the moment. You know, I've had clients that we put offers in on 20 to 30 houses, and we've gone to see 40, 50 houses. And the fact of the matter is, you know, especially when it was really hot, the market was really hot, houses were getting 15 to 30 offers a house. I had one house that I put an offer in for a client that received over 50 offers on. So, and there's only one person that gets that house. So it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier in the show where you got to get through 99 no's to get that one yes. And that's where what I tell my clients is all it takes is one, and we're going to keep trying, we're going to keep trying, and we're going to keep changing our offers or getting creative in how we can better our offers to get that next one accepted. So it is discouraging at moments. It definitely is discouraging at moments. But if you just keep pushing, keep working hard. At the end of the day, it is more than worth it. And when you finally do get that house, it's an amazing feeling.
So when we come back, I want to ask you, is there any magic to the offers? Have you found any things that make sellers more apt to take an offer? This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Unber.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com, or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At CenterPoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California, and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to CenterPoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. Our guest, Connor Schwartz, with discussing real estate and real estate psychology. So I'm wondering, Connor, if there is a magic. So when I want to try to persuade somebody to do something, I try to get into their world and offer them something they might want. Do you ever do that with sellers? Do you ever write an offer with a specific seller in mind?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I always, how I approach every transaction or potential offer or deal is, if I was on the other side of this deal, what would I want to see to be able to accept that offer? So you basically, to get a deal together in any capacity, it needs to work out what's the best case scenario and what works for the best for both worlds, for both sides. So what some of the things that when I'm representing buyer clients, what we will offer or what we will put in our offer is, you know, say it's, the seller might be older or not even, or maybe it's an estate sale or something's going on in some capacity where it looks like it might be hard for them to move out their furniture, or if there's a lot of, you know, old stuff in the house that, you know, they probably aren't going to be taking with them. Well, we'll put in our offer that, you know, the seller can leave any and all belongings behind that they wish to for the buyer to take care of after closing. That one's one of my favorite ones because a lot of sellers, you know, the hassle of moving can be, moving can be a big headache. And, you know, you have to determine between what stuff you want to bring with you, what stuff you want to throw out. sometimes people don't even want to bring anything with them. They want to start over completely. And especially when, you know, a seller is older, maybe they're moving to a nursing home, or unfortunately in the situations where they're deceased and their kids are taking care of the property or the estate. Sometimes sellers just want to be completely done with the property and what's inside, and they don't want to have to go through cleaning it out or moving stuff out. And us putting in our offer, you know, and line item, and one of the line items, hey, you don't have to worry about anything. If you accept our offer, you don't even have to step foot in the house again, because we will take care of all the belongings that are there after closing. So that's one of my favorites. Another one that kind of plays a similar tune to that one is, you know, we'll say we'll buy the property in as is condition. You know, I don't, as a licensed agent, I don't recommend that to clients right out of the gate unless we're walking through and the client's the one that's comfortable saying that. But that's another thing where, you know, depending on who the client is, especially if it's an investor versus residential, investors are in and out of houses that need to be renovated all the time. So buying a house as is and putting that in the contract can best definitely be advantageous, to clients and to sellers. And then the last thing is, you know, a quick closing. If we have the ability to push the process along and close as soon as possible, and we specifically note that in the contract or in the offer, a lot of sellers, they like that ability. And better yet, sometimes we'll even put in flexible closing to the seller's schedule. So if the seller, you know, wants to bring all the stuff with them, but they need 2 months to move it out, well, we'll give you those 2 months as long as we close in that third month. And if you take our offer, we'll have a flexible closing schedule to the seller's timeline.
So did it ever happen that a seller left their furniture and you went through and you found something valuable?
Yes, actually, I wouldn't say something super, super valuable, but it happens all the time where the seller will leave pretty much everything in the house or a lot of stuff in the house, and then we'll find, like, cool old record players or really old antique furniture from, like, the 1920s, 1930s, one of the houses we just did about a year ago, actually. We found some amazing furniture, and we had some different people come in and look at it and appraise it, and ended up being able to sell, like, 8 pieces of furniture for, like, $300 to $1,000 a piece of furniture, which was pretty cool. So it worked out in everybody's favor, where the seller was able to leave all the stuff behind they didn't want, and then the buyer bought the house, so they got the house, and then they made a couple thousand dollars off of selling some of the stuff to people that were going to use it and take good care of it.
Did you ever find a family heirloom that you returned to the seller?
Yes, we found stuff before where, you know, whether it's photo albums or pictures or something that seems like it could be sentimental, we'll reach out to the seller and say, hey, do you want this? And oftentimes they say yes. Occasionally you don't get a response back, or they just say to throw it out. But more oftentimes than not, they're really appreciative, and they say, oh, yeah, absolutely, thank you so much. And so, yeah, we definitely do.
So we're quickly running out of time. I want to ask a quick question about seller psychology. What do you do with a seller who wants to price the house too high?
Yeah, so that's definitely been an issue as of late, in regards, especially the current market, just because the current market is not nearly as hot as it was over the last couple years. So you're seeing people that, you know, maybe in the spring, last spring, their house could have sold for $250,000 that want to list their house at, you know, $260,000, $270,000, and, you know, in reality, they probably won't even be able to sell their house for $230,000 in the current market, $230,000. So right now, the key is, for me, what I always do is I always run comparables. I comps. I find houses that have sold that are very similar size-wise and condition-wise to theirs that have sold, you know, in the immediate area. So I can show them that. I walk through their house with them. I say, you know, this, and this should be done to achieve this price. I'll give them examples of recent houses that I've represented buyers and putting offers in on that are in the area, so they can get a feel for, you know, this house is listed at $215,000 and or $220,000, and we put in an offer on it, and there was only 2 other offers, and they were right at list price. So the ability for you to get $260,000 or $270,000 for your house is not that much. And the key right now is to price the houses competitively with the market, because you want to get as many people through the door as possible, because that's the best chance you have to put it, to getting an offer. When you're overpricing the house, people, agents and buyers, they're smart. They know when a house is overpriced, and they're just not going to look at it if they feel it's overpriced. So the key is get as many people through the door as possible, because the more people that come through the door physically, the more chance you have of somebody falling in love with the house and putting an offer in on it.
So suppose they still insist on the high price, will you do what they say?
So if they still persist on putting a high price on it, usually we'll say, you know, we can list it for you, but this is what we advise. We don't advise to list it at that price. But yes, we, at the end of the day, the client, we work for the client. We work for our clients. So they want us to list their house at a price that we feel is overpriced, then we'll list it. I will say more often than not, the seller or that client ends up coming back to us within a week or two of, you know, having one or two showings or no showings and saying, you know what, you were right, let's lower the price. The only problem is at that point, when you lower the price after it being on the market for a week or two, agents and buyers start to think that something's wrong with the house. So you kind of shoot yourself in the foot in that respect. And I tell that to sellers before we list their house directly of, you know, this is my, this is the experience I've had. You know, if you want to list it high, we still can, but if we lower the price, we might get some action, but it's not going to be nearly as, you know, clean or nice of offers as competitively.
A lot of psychology, you don't even have time to ask about sellers who are, have cold feet. They put it on the market and take it off, and I'm sure that gives headaches to the agent.
I've dealt with several of those clients as well. Might have to talk about it next time.
Well, Connor, thank you for sharing some of your knowledge with us. I hope that people have learned from our discussion about the importance of persistence, both in finding a career and in buying and selling houses. So, again, appreciate very much your appearing on the show again. And I wish everyone an excellent week.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.